Welcome to the Harmonia Early Music Podcast. I'm Janelle Davis.
And I'm Wendy Gillespie. Today, we're continuing a podcast mini-series on the instrumental music of J.S. Bach. And just like last week, we'll play some very familiar music, but with a bit of a twist.
That's right. Last week, we listened to Bach's solo violin partitas played on the lute and the viol. This week, we're going to hear two recordings of the Bach cello suites, each with a completely different approach. Peter Vispelway performs on a 2012 release from the EPR Classics label. By the way, Wendy, EPR stands for Evil Penguin Records, no joke.
Oh.
And Sigisvold Kuijken performs on a 2009 Accent Records release.
Bach's cello suites are almost a rite of passage for cellists, whatever kind of cello they play. And recordings of the suites are quite plentiful. Like the violin sonatas, a successful performance requires that the player understand the harmony both implied and written into the music. Harmonic motion gives us strong hints of how to play the music in terms of phrasing, timing, and articulation. Of course, every performer who records these works offers a special stamp and a distinctive interpretation of the pieces. But what are we hearing today that sets the Kuijken and Vispelway recordings apart even further?
Good question. And, you know, I think the best way to answer that is simply to listen.
Good idea.
First, just for a reference, let's listen to a tiny bit of the G major prelude from the older, well-admired recording made by Rostropovich in 1995. Then we'll head on to the CDs we're featuring today. We'll again hear some of that prelude from Kuijken's 2009 recording, and following that, more of the same piece as played by Vispelway.
Sounds like a plan. Rostropovich, then Kuijken, then Vispelway. Yes, here we go. Indeed. And of course, the first and most noticeable thing is the variety of pitches between those three performers. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Rostropovich is playing at what we've come to think of over the years as standard modern pitch, A equals 440. Then we heard Sigisvold Kuijken playing at A 415, which is generally accepted as standard Baroque pitch.
Okay, first 440, then down a half step to 415. And then it was quite jarring what happened next.
I agree. Lastly, we heard Vispelway playing at A equals 392, a low pitch that is often associated with French Baroque music.
Ah, the never-ending quest to find A. Reminds me of a good book I read once.
Would that be Bruce Haynes' The Story of A?
That is the book. But oh my goodness, we'll be here all day if we get stuck on A.
Right. But just a few more thoughts on A, because it really is a defining characteristic of Peter Vispelvay's recording. He tuned his cello down to 392, a full tone lower than where modern cellists usually perform. The reason for Vispelvay's choice of low pitch for Bach's cello suites is something we won't really delve into today, but the effect it has on the music is striking, don't you think?
How low can you go? That 392 pitch, together with that close miking, lends Vispelvay's recording a dramatic and earthy sound full of lots of texture.
This recording of the suites is like few others that I've heard, and I think it can't all be credited to the low pitch. This is, in fact, Vispelvay's third recording of the cello suites, an indication that even after his first two recordings, he still felt he had something new to say. And just two more things to note before moving on from this recording. In preparing this newest offering, Vispelvay worked with John Butt and Lawrence Dreyfus, and many of Vispelvay's resulting musical decisions are presented in the documentary accompanying this two-disc set. And Vispelvay may not be finished yet. He made his third recording to celebrate his 50th birthday, but also indicated in that documentary that six recordings for six cello suites isn't an idea that's totally out of question.
It always amazes me how much there is left to be discovered in music, even after you sort of know it inside and out. You've memorized it, you've performed it lots of times. There's still stuff to learn from it and stuff that it will teach you. Mm-hmm. But onward and upward, crank it up, or should I say, size it down. There are all sorts of interesting things about the recording by Sigisvald Kalkin. We've already pointed out his performing pitch was A415. But that's hardly the most interesting thing about the recording, is it?
Right. The pitch is less of a main issue in this recording. Instead, listeners will be more interested in the very special instrument that Kalkin is playing. Let's listen.
Thank you. The sound is so different than Vispelvay's cello. Tell me, is the instrument that we just heard Kauken play, would that happen to be a violoncello da spalla?
That's the one. Literally, it translates as shoulder cello.
I thought so. This violoncello da spalla, though held more like a violin than a cello, is smaller than what we would think of as a normal-sized cello, but larger than a somewhat standard, if there's any such thing, standard-sized viola. And it's held against the body with a leather strap. Tell me, Janelle, why on earth would Sigisvald Kauken choose this as his instrument of choice to record the cello suites?
That's a big question, Wendy. Any detailed discussion of the cello suites is bound to bring up more questions than answers. But in a nutshell, I just want to point out that Kauken is primarily a violinist. This is important because it seems that one of the attractions of the violoncello da spalla is that it can be easily learned by violinists. That is, the lateral bow stroke is more violin-like than cello-like, and the left-hand fingering is also more similar to what a violinist would do than a cellist.
Well, you and I happen to be lucky enough to know a living violoncello da spalla player pretty well, don't we?
Oh, yes, a dear friend, Koji Otsuki, one of only a few players around here in the U.S.
Absolutely, and he's a violinist himself, just as you are. Have you ever had a chance to try this violoncello da spalla of Koji's?
I had the chance to play a few notes once, and though it certainly was not easy on my first try, I could immediately see how idiomatic the instrument could be for a violinist. And I have it on good report that the cello suites, they fit very well on the violoncello da spalla, and are in many ways arguably more comfortable, maybe, and more natural on this instrument than on a so-called normal cello.
Ooh, very interesting. Gosh, so what instrument do you think Bach wrote the suites for? The cello as we know it, or the violoncello da spalla, or something else entirely?
In fact, there is the possibility that Bach may have composed these suites using the shoulder cello. But what version of the cello Bach meant them to be performed on is a question up for a lot of debate. What's more, during Bach's lifetime, a standard cello construction was still developing, so that makes it hard to pinpoint Bach's exact intentions for the instrument. You know, there's another example even in the suites, the five-string piccolo cello that you need for suite number six.
That's right. You need a fifth string that's higher than any of the others on that one, don't you? Mm. Another early music mystery. Can we hear this shoulder cello one more time, Janelle?
Sure. I think that's it for part two of our Bach podcast miniseries. Next week, part three and Bach's Artifuge.
We very much hope you enjoy hearing these recordings. If you'd like to know more about them, head on over to our website, harmoniaearlymusic.org.
While you're there, browse our archive of blogs, podcasts, and shows, and visit our online shop, where a portion of your purchase will benefit Harmonia. This has been the Harmonia Early Music Podcast. I'm Janelle Davis.
And I'm Wendy Gillespie. Thanks for listening.